Okay, our next case this morning is number 20-2261, Nishia Corporation versus Document Security Systems. Okay, Mr. Macon.
May I remove the mask?
Yes.
May it please the court, Thomas Macon of Sherman and Sterling on behalf of Appellant Nishia. Nishia appeals from an IPR final written decision in which the Patent Trial and Appeal Board found certain claims of the 087 patent not unpatentable over LED-related prior art to Takanaka and Okazaki. With respect to Takanaka, the board found claims 1 and 6 to 8 unpatentable, but found the remaining claims not unpatentable based on both a claim construction error and a wooden refusal to follow the internal cross-references within Nishia's petition. With respect to Okazaki, the board wrongly found that the references figures, which clearly show the required cavities, are trumped by the particular nomenclature and purpose ascribed to them by Okazaki. Unless the panel has a preference, I'd like to start with Takanaka. The board found claims 1 and 6 to 8 unpatentable over Takanaka and another LED prior art reference, Kyowa, and the remainder of the claims not unpatentable. But the evidence, including unrebutted expert testimony of Dr. Sheely, shows there to be no credible dispute that Takanaka and Kyowa render obvious the appealed claims. The board made its determination despite no separate argument from Appellee DSS and without raising any issues prior to final written decision. The decision rests on two legal errors. First, the board, without argument from patent owner, found Claim 9's preamble to be limited. Second, the board found Nishia's internal cross-referencing in its petition to be insufficiently particular.
Counsel, you talked in your brief about how a preamble within a preamble should not be limiting. It seems to me that whether you've got a preamble or a preamble within a preamble, the same law should apply for determining whether that preamble should have weight or not. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I think a preamble's purpose is to give context for what's being described in the body. As explained in Articat 919 F3rd 1320, preambles are non-limiting when the body recites a structurally complete invention. I think DSS has admitted the general rule is that they're non-limiting. And if you look at the guideposts in Catalina Marketing, you look at whether the preamble is essential, whether it provides antecedent basis, was used to avoid prior art. And here the evidence, including unrebutted expert testimony, shows the preamble should not be limiting. Body structural complete, the preamble provides no antecedent basis, and the preamble, according to the expert, doesn't breathe life and meaning into the claim. The board's reasoning seemed to be...
The preamble, according to the expert, doesn't breathe life and meaning into the claim?
In other words, an expert looked at the claim.
Don't you look at for whether it breathes life and body in the claim? One of the things you could look at is whether it provides antecedent basis. It's not necessarily required to have an expert opine on that, right?
In other words, you don't need an expert to say that?
I agree with that.
The board's reasoning seemed to be they looked at only the first three words as being non-limiting. Part of it was this failure to recognize that you could have the word comprising twice. But it was also, I think, relying too heavily on the first instance of the word comprising, and an emphasis that Appellee sort of seized on in their brief when they inserted a non-existent colon right after the first comprising. There's only one colon in this preamble if you're just looking at its structure, right where it usually is, at the end, setting it off from the body of the claim. The second Takanaka issue relates to the board's treatment of the internal cross-referencing in Nishia's petition with respect to claims 9 and 15. And this is not a dispute about the prior art. Patent owner never argued that claim 9's preamble was absent from the art.
Where is it that you say that Takanaka teaches plastic?
So we explain with respect to claim 1 and the limitation that the table shows you to look at that Takanaka's reflector housing is resin.
Where is that?
Mm-hmm. 160 to 161 of the appendix, Your Honor. And resin is known to be a plastic, and in fact, resin and plastic are equated earlier in the Okazaki grounds, Your Honor. The petition basically set forth specific analysis and the evidence early in the document, and then referred back to it thereafter. And the overly rigid view the board took seems contrary to this court's prior decisions. For example,
this argument applies to the electrical connection limitation?
This applies to both the electrical connection limitation of Claim 15 and to the extent plastic is found to be limiting in the preamble of Claim 9. For example, in CRFD...
It seems to me that your argument is requesting that the court make the argument for you. Just by referring back, it relies on us to connect the dots for you, and you're the one that should be connecting the dots to begin with.
So I agree that I should be connecting the dots, and I think it couldn't be more clear. At Appendix 177 in the petition, it states, and this is discussing Claim 15 in Takanaka, this is exemplary, the differences between Claim 15 and Claim 1 are discussed in Section 6B9. 6B9 is not some giant section. It's a specific reference to the petition's discussion of Okazaki and Claim 15. And in this reference discussion is a table, an extremely clear table at Appendix 151 to 152.
But this is one thing I want to point out.
Yes.
Is that the discussion on page 177 is for Takanaka. And you're referring back to a discussion that involves a completely different prior art reference, right?
So with respect to the table showing how you line up which portion of Claim 1 with which portion of Claim 15, that's correct. With respect to teaching the disclosure, absolutely not. That's taught in the section regarding Takanaka and Claim 1.
So your view is that Claim 1 also requires plastic. It's just in a different element of the claim? Is that your view?
With respect to Claim 9 and the plastic limitation, it is correct that in Claim 1, it discusses that that the reflector housing is resin, and then Claim 9, when discussing limitation 9B, which lines up in the table to 1B, you just look back at the discussion of 1B, it says the reflector housing is plastic. With respect to Claim 15, where you're talking about the electrical connection, limitation 15C is shown in the table to line up to 1D. 1D is the LED mounted, and 15C is the LED mounted and electrically connected. And the proof in Takanaka Claim 1 of the petition for the electrically connected, for example, is that the way it's mounted is by being mechanically and electrically connected. In fact, when the board describes at Appendix 14 and 15 Takanaka, it quotes the salient portion saying that the LED is electrically connected to the lead frame. There's simply no dispute with respect to Claim 15. It's almost ridiculous. Of course the LED is electrically connected to the leads. DSF never disputes it, and as I say, the board at 14 and 15 literally quotes Takanaka saying it. Figure 1 shows...
I have a question for you. Yeah. I don't see where, and I could be missing it, but where does Claim 1 compare to Claim 9 and say that Claim 1 has plastic or resin?
So, with respect to Okazaki and Claim 9...
I'm looking at pages A143 to 144, which includes your comparison of Claim 1 and Claim 9, which is what you're relying on. You're saying that on page A177, that it talks about the differences between Claim 15 and Claim 1. I just want to know where it is. I didn't think Claim 1 actually recited either resin or plastic, and I want you to tell me why I'm wrong.
So with respect to Claim 9, and you pointed me to Appendix 143 and 144, the table shows which limitations of Claim 9 match up to limitations of Claim 1. There's a similar one for Claim 15 in this Okazaki
section. The question is, where does Claim 1 talk about resin?
It doesn't
mention
sorry.
Plastic, but where does it say resin?
That's right. So in the Takanaka section...
Just the language of Claim 1.
Yes. One second, Your Honor. Okay. So in the Claim 9 section regarding Okazaki, it lines up the two reflector housing limitations, 9B and 1B. And in the Okazaki discussion of one, the Okazaki
question.
Discussion
Where is
of 1B.
It in Claim 1 that it talks about resin? There's no, I don't see that there's any resin language in Claim 1.
It's Appendix 160 to 161, Your Honor. In the Okazaki section.
I'm looking at the claim language on 106. Here's claim one. Where does it talk about resin?
So resin does not show up in claim nine, if that's the question.
No, the question is whether it shows up in claim one.
It does not.
Problem.
So I don't think it's a problem in the Okazaki, with all due respect, in the Okazaki section at the beginning of the brief to say this is how I'm going to compare claim nine to claim one and claim 15 to claim one. And then use that as the guidepost for the rest of the brief.
The problem is that claim, even if you do that comparison, you're still missing a claim element, which is plastic. Might be an obvious claim element, but it's still a claim element that's in claim nine and not claim one. So comparing claim 1 to claim 9 and saying, well, that's enough, is a little bit difficult when claim 9 has a limitation that claim 1 lacks. And that's the very limitation the board found that you didn't point them to any, you didn't identify anything specifically in Takanaka for teaching that limitation.
It's my view that saying that 9B lines up with 1B, and you look at the 1B discussion of Takanaka, and it calls the reflector housing plastic, that should be enough. Resin.
But I look at element 9, and where the plastic is recited is in the preamble.
I agree
okay.
On that.
All right.
I'd like briefly to turn to Okazaki, if I may. The board found Okazaki allegedly doesn't disclose two pockets or cavities, but this conclusion is not supported by substantial evidence, given that the board relies only on legally irrelevant expert testimony and ignores overwhelming contrary evidence.
Didn't the board look at the two experts' testimony, one saying this is just a funnel and therefore it's not two cavities, and said that that testimony seemed more plausible, more credible to them?
So, with all due respect, I think that's not what they said. In fact, their expert, Mr. Cordell, admitted that Okazaki teaches an hourglass, that's Appendix 1047, with one portion above and one portion below the lead frame, and that's at Appendix 839. So not a funnel at all. What the board pointed to, whether you think it's they pointed to it substantively or to find one expert more believable than the other, was just improper. They pointed to the fact that Okazaki referred to its two cavities as a single structure, that it called the structure as a tubular vessel instead of a cavity, and that its purpose was allegedly different. But, you know, a single structure can meet two limitations.
Didn't the board resolve this issue based on credibility determination of the experts?
So to the extent they did that, they only did it.
And they did do that, right?
It was a little hard for me to tell, but to the extent they did it, they did it based on the fact that their expert quite rightly said what the purpose was of the prior art, what it called the prior art, and the fact that it called it a single structure, none of which should matter. The particular nomenclature shouldn't matter. We don't apply an ipsissimis verbis test. The purpose, you can't read a purpose into the structural claim limitation. That seems improper. And in fact, the only way the board really could have found Okazaki not to disclose two cavities is to have been influenced by DSS's proposed and rejected claim construction, that a cavity has to be enclosed on all sides but one. That would explain the focus on the hole between the two cavities and why they would even cite to an expert deck, given the expert and DSS both said you can't find a cavity without having their claim construction in mind. In actual fact, the patent spec says that a cavity can be open on three sides, for example, compartments 52 of figure 2. And DSS's expert admitted that the tubular vessel in Okazaki was a single cavity. But that's open on both ends. The board's announced claim construction requires no property of a cavity other than it be of such a shape. Okazaki's figures plainly show two cavities, and whether and how Okazaki labels those two cavities doesn't change what the figures show. And I think I'm well into my extra time.
I will give you 2 minutes. Okay, Mr. Kroger.
Thank you. May it please the court, Paul Kroger for Respondent Below and Appellee Cross-Appellant Document Security Systems. The board's decision...
Let me ask you about this electrically connected thing. I'm having a very hard time understanding this. I mean, lights don't work unless they're electrically connected. It doesn't seem necessarily to be inherent in a light patent that they're electrically connected. And the expert testimony at 397 says that they're electrically connected. That's the way things work. And the board itself cites the trial practice guide, which cites KS Hemp, that you can have a common sense applies something that's evidently and indisputably within the common knowledge of those skilled in the art. I don't know how something's not within the common knowledge when you have a light and the common knowledge is that lights work because they're electrically connected. I mean, this seems to me to be bizarre.
I would just point the court back to its own decision in Magnum Oil. We're here to review the arguments raised in the petition, not the arguments...
Well, they raised that in the petition. They quoted their expert who said that people would know that this is electrically connected. Do you dispute that the light can't work if it's not electrically connected? Do you argue that?
The only thing I dispute, Your Honor, is whether or not it was raised with respect to Claim 15. And that's sort of the issue here.
They cited their expert testimony in the petition with respect to Claim 15.
The expert did not say this was inherent, or what he said is...
He said everybody knows that lights are electrically connected.
He said inherent. It was insubstantial. That was the actual word he used in his declaration, that it was insubstantial.
No, but yes, he uses those words, but he says, and if you look at 397, he says, opposer reading Claim 15 would have known that LED dyes should be electrically connected to the leads. This would have been the conventional means for powering LED dyes. I mean, you know, what's inadequate about that? It's not as though they ignored the issue.
You were saying that was in Appendix 397, Your Honor?
Yeah. And that's cited in the petition, quoted in the petition.
In paragraph 233, he says, it is my opinion that the fourth difference is insubstantial because a Posita would have known the LED dyes should be electrically connected to the leads, as this would have been the conventional means for powering the LED dyes. He does not cite any factual support for that. It's a bare conclusion.
Factual support. He says that that's the way lights work. I mean, is there any question about that?
There, you know, to the extent there was support
Is there any question about that? Lights have to be electrically connected to work, right?
The Code of Federal Regulations says that...
No, you're not answering my question. Lights have to be electrically connected to work, right?
Forgive me, Your Honor, I do not believe petitioner made the submission in the record,
Please answer my question. Is it not the case that lights don't work if they're not electrically connected?
So, again, the issue here is...
No, answer the question.
I think the problem here is, Your Honor, that the answer to that question is not in the record, respectfully.
But everybody knows that lights don't work if they're not electrically connected.
Then
is there any doubt about that?
And if it were so cut and dry, I believe that the board would have recognized this and would have been able to credit
Maybe
the expert's testimony.
If it's so cut and dry, the board should have recognized that instead of being so mechanical about it.
Unfortunately, Your Honor, IPRs are a mechanical process. We're here to analyze the arguments raised in the petition and nothing else. If they cite...
Why isn't the language in the petition at JA-179 sufficient to give the board, particularly point out what the petitioner's view was on this claim limitation?
So, because what we have here is, and they say they cross-referenced, and I'm sorry, can you give me the appendix site for that? Do you have it?
179.
179, thank you. Thank you. And again, what we're, that's, you know, the board found that they simply essentially said this was insubstantial, so they didn't need to show that it was present in the prior art.
But they said more than just it's insubstantial. They said more than that.
They said
everything that Judge Dyke just read to you.
Yes, and I believe the board they were citing back to the same declaration of Dr. Sheely that we just looked at, where Dr. Sheely said essentially the exact same thing with no factual support. And so
what do you mean no factual support? He says everybody knows this. Well, that's factual support. I mean, you can't even stand there and say that he's wrong. Everybody knows that lights are connected to electricity.
But he's a person born in, well, he's not a person born in your skill in the art, but he's an expert in this area, so why can't he use his own life experiences to understand the basic point?
Because
that the LEDs have to be electrically connected in order to work.
Because that's what 37 CFR 42.65A, as well as what this court's holding in In Re Nuvasiv says, that if you don't have factual support, the...
Why isn't the expert's view factual support?
Because again, it is entitled to little or no weight if you just say it. There should be some reference to something in the prior art, some reference to something in a treatise.
It's not enough for him to say it's my opinion, which is what he said here.
I don't believe that is enough, Your Honor. Not in the IPR context.
Maybe it depends on the context and how, you know. Maybe it depends on the context.
It might depend on the context. There might be times where it is enough. There might be times where it's not enough. But the board, you know, made a factual finding that it was not enough in this context. And I remind you that because petitioner...
The board said you had to cite prior art. You don't have to cite prior art for something like this. That's wrong, right?
I don't necessarily know the board said you didn't necessarily cite the Okazaki reference, but you could have cited a treatise, you could have cited something in the art to provide the basis for your opinion.
The board's own trial practice manual and the K.S. Hemp case says that the board can consider things which are indisputably the case. And here, on the face of it, it's indisputable that lights have to be electrically connected to work, and you have explicit testimony relied on by the petition saying that lights are electrically connected. I mean, you know.
I hear what you're saying, Your Honor, but I think the claims are a little bit more complicated than that lights have to be connected to work. And as you say, the board can consider things that are indisputably the case. There's no a statement that they must consider things that are quote-unquote indisputably the case, and furthermore, there should be some evidence as to whether or not things are indisputably the case. And I believe the record here is lacking there. Petitioner probably could have made this argument. It's just lacking. They just didn't.
So it's your view that it's not enough for an expert to say that the conventional means for powering the LED dies in such a configuration is through electrical connection?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe there should be a cite to something to back up that opinion. So in terms of the plastic limitation and whether or not that was limiting, I would just like to note that preambles within preambles are not inherently limiting or non-limiting. They're subject to the same standards as normal preambles. They're sometimes non-limiting, but if they supply structure, they can be limiting. And here, we submit plastic did supply structure, and the board was correct in finding that portion of the preamble to be limiting. I note that using a plastic-leaded chip carrier is an embodiment specifically taught by the patent at 161 to 64, 2, 5 to 9, and 5.
Do you agree that resin is plastic?
Again, there here are arguments the petitioner could have made but didn't. They never made
I'm
any
argument. Just asking, do you agree?
We don't. There's nothing in the record that we say definitively shows resin is plastic as resin is used in Takanaka. There may be some discussion from Okazaki that plastic is resin the petitioner showed it to, but when it came to petitioner's arguments as to Takanaka, there's nothing in the record saying that the resin in Takanaka is plastic. It's just not there.
Are there resins which are not plastic?
And, you know, we never had the opportunity, because petitioner did not cite to Takanaka's teaching for resin, we didn't have the opportunity to respond to that argument. So that's just something that's simply not in the record. Had petitioner said this resin is plastic, we might have been able to respond to it and say maybe this resin is not plastic or not what a PZ would understand as plastic.
The question is whether there's an issue here.
And we didn't know there was an issue to respond to because petitioner did not cite to Takanaka's discussion.
But you don't know whether resin is plastic?
We did not take a position on it, and there's nothing in the record as to whether resin in Takanaka is plastic. Turning to the Okazaki reference, just briefly, I believe this panel's questions sort of went right to the point here. The board correctly weighed expert testimony and decided that petitioner's expert testimony was lacking, and for that reason that they had failed to carry their burden to show that Okazaki disclosed the two cavities. The petitioner characterizes their expert's testimony as overwhelming, but really, if you look at his expert's testimony, all he does is cite to figure 3 and a very small portion of the Okazaki reference that basically discusses what the numbers of the figures refer to, and that's about it. What our expert, Mr. Cridell, did was actually look at the reference and explain what this figure, what this reference taught with respect to the figure. And the board said that in light of the teaching, they found our expert's testimony more credible. This was a factual determination that was clear, that was within the power of the board to decide, and that should be affirmed. If I can move, unless your honors have any more questions about their affirmative appeal, if I can move briefly to the cross appeal. We have cross-appealed the board's findings that claims 1 and 6 to 8 were unpatentable over Takanaka and Kiyoa. We did it on two grounds. The first was that there was no evidence that the combined references disclosed limitation 1E, and the second was on a lack of evidence of combinability. If I can just only speak about the second ground, what happened in this case, Your Honors, we believe the board switched the burden to us to disprove combinability as opposed to putting the burden on petitioner to prove combinability. The most egregious example of this in the record is where their expert said having a lead frame would be great because it would give a place to guide the leads, and again, with no support. And the board actually sort of conceded that there was no support, but decided to credit it anyways and give it great weight, in directly contrary to In Re Nuvasiv in 37 CFR. We also raised other questions about Dr. Sheely's testimony, considering whether or not they should be combined because the Takanaka reference already taught protection, and he said Kiyoa provided protection, and we pointed out that Takanaka with his metal body 8 provided the same kind of protection. And the board turned the burden back on us to substantiate that as opposed to putting the burden on petitioner and Dr. Sheely to show why Takanaka's 8 purported, metal body 8 provided a better level of protection. And we think that if the board had correctly held petitioner to their burden, that there should have been no finding of combinability and the board's decision in that regard should be reversed. Unless if the panel has any more questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
I recognize I have precious little time, so there are just a few things I wanted to quickly mention. With respect to the preamble, I think it's important that this was the broadest reasonable interpretation standard. You know, no one argued that the preamble was limiting. There was no discussion of it by the board prior to the final written decision, and this court, of course, has de novo review. The key question is whether or not anything in the preamble supplies necessary structure to the body, not that it is structure, the display was clearly structure, and they found it not limiting. And I'll note for the record that the argument that plastic is structure, I couldn't actually find in their briefs. Last, with respect to their cross-appeal, the obviousness argument would have passed muster under TSM. The motivation to combine was right in Kiyoa about the internal support for the leaves. And I'm definitely out of time.
If we were to agree with you about electrically...
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If we were to agree with you about electrically connected in Claim 15, that's the only issue with respect to Claim 15?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And with respect to the preamble in Claim 9 and 10, that's the only issue with respect to those. So the only thing to be sent back down would be the dependent claims, if you were to agree with me.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I didn't hear anything about the cross appeal. Mr. Mitkin's argument. I'm not saying that you should. I'm just saying if you didn't say anything about it, then there's no opportunity for rebuttal.
I think I said one thing about it, just that Kiowa actually provided the motivation directly in it. Okay. It would have passed the TSM test years ago.
Okay.
And I apologize for leaving my water here. No more questions?
No.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Kroger, you have a minute.
I believe I addressed the obviousness in my opening argument, so unless the panel has any further questions about the cross-appeal, I will reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Thank you.
Or I will sit down.
You can save it for the next case you argue.
I'll remember that, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank all counsel. The case is submitted.